Today's program is Restorative Justice here at CKRZ. I'm Al Sue. Thank you so much for joining us. And our panel today consists of Barbara General, Tom Porter, Lady Cano, Lee Hill, Lance Logan Key, and Abby Avery. And yes, we are taking questions. So if you have a question for our panel, just give us a call at 519-445-4140. We'll be happy to take your question and pass it along to our panel today. And we're going to turn the floor back over to Barb.
Okay, we have some couple questions that came in. So anybody can jump in and respond. So the first question is, if I say I am Ongwahongwe and follow the great law as great as possible in this colonized world and yet respect the other nation's laws, how then when people say they are Ongwahongwe but yet listen to the Western world's law and force their authority to the people for no reason, how then does that person get justice?
That's a long question, Barb.
It is a long question, but I think that they're talking about having our own justice system and instead of listening to outside nations' laws and that's imposed on us. So how are we actually following the great law, right? But I think we're following the great law principles in the work that we do. And I think eventually we want to have our own judicial system on our adjudication system on, you know, in our territories. But that's a ways off, and that's something that's really going to have to take a lot of work with the whole community to get that off the ground. Mm-hmm. And in my heart, I think that if the Confederacy would step up to the game and say, "Yes, we're going to institute a judicial system based on our laws," let them take it over and do it. That would be great. That's because it's so much pressure on me to develop that piece. But we already have it in place. And every day I say when we don't follow those principles, the legal principles that have been derived from the great law in regards to being kind and respectful and compassionate and understanding and open, that we break our law every day, right? That's something we have to really digest and let it become a part of us as kind people. We have to become kind people because otherwise we're not following the great law. And even kind people, until like we have our own adjudication system or legal system, we have to be able to follow those laws, those Canadian laws, until we have our own. Because if we don't, if you break the law, you're going to go to jail, or if you don't go to court, there'll be a warrant out for your arrest. All these things that happen, right? So it's I remember my aunt said one time I had lost my license. She says you didn't follow the law. Even our own law tells you have to respect other laws, right? And I was like, oh, she's not taking my side. Because I hadn't paid a ticket, right? So I didn't even know I lost my license. But you still have to follow laws in order to maintain, I guess, society. And I don't know if anybody would answer that question. It was a difficult, that's a long question.
Yeah, it is up to the leaders of the Confederacy to become functional again, as it used to be, because they did make the different agreements with the different European powers. Mm-hmm. First with the Dutch, that's what they always recall or talk about, the Touro Wampum. And the Touro Wampum suggests that there are two sovereign powers that are equal, not one more powerful or less than the other, but equal as brothers, and they will respect each other with kindness and compassion. That has not been followed ever by the Dutch or the French or the English or the Canadians ever. So that is a problem. And in that world, it seems like you need an army to back up your principles. And that's why countries have armies, because they don't use peace and they don't use real justice. They need army and nuclear powers, and that's why everybody's got nuclear power threatening each other, and that's the world we kind of live in. That's the kind of world that has to change, and that's a lot. That needs a lot of work on behalf of a lot of people. And so our own leaders of the Iroquois Confederacy really has to make our law become functional again as it was once. And they have to be real just and real kind and real loving. And that's a big job to do. Mm-hmm. And we're all responsible for that, everybody. And even Canada and American people, even if they follow this law that makes us say, you got to do this or you got to go to jail, they can't help it either. That they've inherited that kind of thinking, and that has to change, and they have to reconsider their own law, how they become more human as well, so that peace can have a chance instead of by threat.
And I think that if HTC was functional, we wouldn't have to have restorative justice programs. We wouldn't have to have a justice department. We wouldn't have to have these things. But because they're not functional, that's why we're here. Mm-hmm. That's why we have these programs here. And we become surrogates for the work that they should be doing. We really are. All these agencies in Oswegans are surrogates for the work that the Confederacy should be doing. And that's what I tell people. I don't really want to be here. If they step up, then I'll back off. Really. And we should.
Mm-hmm. I also think it's an understanding that if you all the bells and whistles, all the dressing up, we're looking for the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's a code of conduct. Mm-hmm. Now, our great law is a code of conduct. Mm-hmm. Their legal system is a code of conduct. Mm-hmm. We had consequences if you went against that code of conduct. They have consequences. Mm-hmm. If you go against that, their laws. It's not a matter of what are we following. It's what are the themes underneath that we're both following. Mm-hmm. And it's an understanding that if you really look at, change your perspective on it, we had a customary way of understanding our code of conduct, whereas they have everything written down, it's codified, and they don't deviate from that. Whereas us, that's the human aspect, is we don't just take a look at what happened, we look at the circumstances around it. So it's different perspectives on how to do the same thing. But underneath it all, it's not very different. They just have a lot more words that they use.
I think it's very different. I think they're more punitive, the Canadian system.
Well, there's that. It's more punitive. But underneath it all, mm-hmm. we're looking for the same thing. How do we all work together? Because mm-hmm. we're not individuals walking through a world. We're individuals walking through a world with more other individuals that we have to cooperate with.
It's about relationship.
Mm-hmm. Relationships.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think at the core of Haudenosaunee teachings is about building those relationships, right? So even though I like... when I push back on the Crowns, I like when I push back on those lawyers, because I told you, Abby, that they're the only ones that will allow me to push back on them, argue with them, and still be friends at the end of the day.
You know? Otherwise, nobody would speak to us.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to go on to the next question. If Emily or Lady want to add to that question, the first one.
Can you repeat the question, please?
Oh, dear. If I say I'm Ongwahongwe and follow the great law as great as possible in this colonized world and yet respect the other nation's laws, how then when people say they are Ongwahongwe but yet listen to the Western world's law and force their authority to the people for no reason, how does that person get justice?
That last part, enforce their authority with no reason? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, it's a really complicated question. You guys answered that really great. No,
well, that did spark another thing for me, too, is that it's understanding definitions. Because it's one thing to throw a word at someone. Mm-hmm. It's another to understand that there's a definition for that. Mm-hmm. So I know in the programs that I do, there's a basic set of phrases or words, but I always explain that as well. Because mm-hmm. A lot of the basis for what I do is the good mind, peace, power, and righteousness, but I define what those are, mm-hmm. particularly peace. Peace isn't an absence of conflict. Peace is having the tools to enter into a conflict where, like you said earlier, we both walk out of it at the end of the day still friends. Mm-hmm. Difference of opinion, mm-hmm. but we negotiate. Yeah. That's peace. Mm-hmm. Peace isn't avoiding conflict. Peace is entering conflicts in the best way possible.
And in that question, when it says, for no reason, again, that shows a... there is a reason. It may be they don't know the reason, and there's not that communication as to what that reason is, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody has their reasons for doing things or following laws. Yeah.
Lady and I were at a presentation at Laurier, and we were talking to, was it a criminology class, right? Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the Haudenosaunee principles, those ones that we were talking about, the inner peace, the love, the compassion, understanding, and so on. And we were asking them, we asked the class, can you raise your hand on how many of you use all of these principles on a daily basis? And nobody's hand went up. And I can't even put my hand up either, because I try really hard, but the reality is, if we were using those Haudenosaunee principles, if we were really being ingraining that who we are, our justice would look a lot different. Because if we were holding on to those principles every day within ourselves, there we would be acting in a way that wouldn't need us to have a system like that in place.
So the only thing that I want to add is I think the concept of justice can be very subjective. So justice looks different for everybody. So I think we need to be mindful of that too.
Right.
Wars are started over people's beliefs or their interpretation of
its
beliefs.
It's true.
But that goes back to that understanding of entering into a conflict, different perspectives, but rather than putting your shields up right away, you're open to the conversation.
Yeah, I find that often too, Lance, very much so, that the biggest thing for some people is the fear of having to address conflict, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because there's been not a lot of people have experience with the rupture and repair of relationships, even within oneself. So the biggest thing for somebody can be not wanting to address something because they're so scared of what the outcome might be, because they've already put in their mind that it's a fearful and something bad will happen if I address this. So they run away from it. Even within themselves, it's hard for even me to address my own inner conflicts. When my inner mind is working against me, I have to try really hard to harness those Haudenosaunee beliefs and believe in myself that I can do this. And I am able to do this.
Yes, you can.
Well, I think one of the biggest things for me working, it's been pushback for the last 4 years as the justice director. Always, service providers, the courts, the crowns, the lawyers. It's just pushing back, but I think I'm able to ask those hard questions because I don't have nothing to lose. I'm like Tom. I'm old. I'm here to help the community.
You're right? Over 39.
Yeah, I'm over 39 now. So I don't know. I think it's something that comes with age. It's like I can ask those hard questions, but I think my sisters will say, you've always asked the hard questions since you were a teenager.
I agree.
So the next question we have.
But we need that, right? We need everybody to be who they are, who they're meant to be, so that we can do what we said we would come down here to do. We agreed to something. So it's important that you are true to who you are, because then that helps us to become who we're meant to be as a people too.
Mm-hmm. So the next question is, all these programs that run on the reserve, if there was no money, would you still be willing to help our children, our youth, our people? Because why does it take a crime before they get their help? That's a good question.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's so something so simple. I think it happens on a daily, for me anyways. I work at a pizza place. I work everywhere. And I find myself just being true to who you are and being true to those teachings. Like, when you love one another, you care. So when you see somebody who is not feeling good, you know, you ask them, like, hey, are you okay? Can I help you? Like, and some people might want it, some people might not want, but at least if you're putting it out there, and you're extending that hand, that friendship. You know what I mean? That's part of our treaties, who's in our belts, that friendship. Everybody's holding hands in that belt. And even when we talk about supporting our chiefs and our clan mothers, everybody's supposed to hold hands and help that tree of peace not fall. So when you're extending your hand to one another, you're holding that true so that we can be who we're meant to be as Haudenosaunee people, strong people. So no matter where you are, whether you're Tim Hortons line or whatnot, you know, extending that peace, no matter where you go, is a really great way for us to do that.
I think the question is, I'm going to repeat it again, all these programs that run on reserve, if there was no money, would you still be willing to help our children, our youth, our people? Because why does it take a crime before they get their help? And I have to say that it depends on how you were raised. And I think my mother was a clan mother, my sister's a clan mother now, but we were always raised to help people. Even when we lived in Buffalo, we had to help she helped the street people, the indigenous people. And this was like in the late 60s, 70s that she did this work. So, and her, my aunt and some other friends put together, it's called 78 Virginia, but it was like little, they rented this little place where they had, you know, the street people could come in and they could get clothes and they could have coffee and something to eat, and they did fundraising to keep it running. So it really, this is something that she ingrained in us, that we're here to help people, not just ourselves, right? And I think that because there's not enough people helping each other, that these programs exist. Again, I'm going to say these programs that are existing at Six Nations in this community they are surrogate programs for the Confederacy and for the clans that are supposed to be taking care of each other, really. And it's can we afford to do this on our own? I don't think so. We have to get paid. We all have to make a living. That's the way the world is operating, right? Everybody has to pay to live in this world. We no longer have, you know, husbandry like farming and where we have our own food supplies anymore. That's something that we should be doing, right? But we don't have that, where we're actually having all of those things that we existed in from an economic standpoint. We don't have that anymore due to our assimilation and adaption to the colonized world.
A quick little story. Mm-hmm. Before I was working here, I was working in the big city, and the name of the program was I Am a Kind Man. Mm-hmm. This is a family violence program directed towards indigenous men being kind in the community. And that used to be a bit of a running joke in the office. Whenever there was an event or a training and they needed that male perspective or something like that, they would say, well, send Lance, he's the kind man. Mm-hmm. And I would joke back, I am the kind man, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. But then I always follow that up with, well, I'm a kind man because I'm a kind man. I just happen to be paid for it now. Mm-hmm. So to answer that question, it's part of who you are. Mm-hmm. Now, to most of us who get into this line of work, mm-hmm. Whether it's in justice or my background is counseling, mm-hmm. We do it because we want to help people. Mm-hmm. So, and they'll tell you right in the first day of school, you're not going to get rich being a counselor.
No.
So
no, you're not.
Exactly. So you make a decision right then and there. Do I want to continue at this knowing, no, I'm not going to be rich. Pay my bills. Mm-hmm. Great. Cool. But it's not really about the money. And you're right. No, we do have to make a living because that's the world we live in. Mm-hmm. It's just who you are. How do you walk in the community? How do you walk as a person? Mm-hmm. Now, because helping someone, if it's truly helping someone, it's not contingent upon being paid. It's about what you're willing to put out. Mm-hmm. And just lucky if you happen to get paid for it.
Mm-hmm. But it's how you're raised, right?
Right.
You emulate what you see. Mm-hmm. So if you're taught that, if you're taught to be compassionate, you're going to be compassionate. So it goes back to if people are healthy and following the great law, there's not a need for the services.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I don't know if it's about how you're being raised, though, to be honest with you. I know some people who have been raised in some not so great homes but ended up being totally opposite than how they were raised.
Well, they want to do better.
That's right. It's intentional. They do it with intention, right?
Yeah, but just from what you were saying, it sounded like you were saying if you're raised that way, then that's how you become that way. But I just wanted to share, like, it's not always that's not always the case. Some people just have it in them to be who they are.
Or some people learn for the opposite reason, right? They're raised a certain way. They don't want to be that, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, and then maybe it's just in some people's natures. That's just who they are. What were you? You had said something the other day, Roxette. No, San Antonio. What did you say? I think you had said something about, oh, gosh, I can't remember now. It must have been a lie.
So to me, I can only speak for myself, and I will do it. Like, I will do the work. I have been involved in this community, and I'm very thankful to this community. I know from here, but people here have treated me really well. So I know at some point we were thinking we were not going to have funding for the program, and I was willing just to keep doing the work because I cannot just leave my people like that. I deeply care about all the people that are coming to work with me, and I think it goes back to those principles too. And that's what I learned here, the Haudenosaunee principles and the good mind. I always said that because it has changed my life. it has changed it completely. I may still have a long way to go and to learn, but I'm a better person because of those principles. And that's something I didn't learn in my country. I didn't know anything about my roots. I didn't know anything about myself. And I think applying those principles in your own life make a big difference. And anything else that you do for the community is something that is just automatic. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the other thing for me is that I've always volunteered for programs from being a tutor to answering crisis lines and, you know, for sexual assault center for crisis. It's something that's in you that wants to help the community because you know we could do better, you know.
Oh, Gail, I know. I remember now. You had mentioned that you, when somebody comes to you, that tablecloth, you're talking about the man that was the same color as the tablecloth, because the tablecloths were like ivory last night, and that you said that the man would just stare at you. You didn't know whether or not you should be scared. That when he came to your house, you still fed him. And you still offered that plate. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of teaching in that, right? And that's what I think that reflects what this question is talking about. That's why I was saying earlier that it's about harnessing those teachings of who we are as a people, extending that friendship, even though you were, you know, you didn't know whether or not to be afraid of this man or not, that you still extend that. Maybe you can speak more about.
Yeah, well, that was a man named Jen Short. He passed away now probably about 8 years ago. And when we first moved to Ganacho Halege, he came from Amsterdam, New York, and he was a single older man, and we didn't know nothing about him, and he was scary looking. He had that green eyes like that, and he came over there, he didn't say much, and he just stared at us, and every day he came over to our house, and And everybody was afraid of him. The women were afraid of him because he was scary looking. But our teachings, all of us, especially at the home where we came from, is anybody comes to your house, you always open the door and you always offer them tea or coffee. And if you're getting ready to eat, you put a plate out for them and you invite them to eat. Even if it's getting, the sun is going down, you may fix a place for them to sleep. You don't ask them if they got a place. You say, there is a place right there to blankets and pillow, sleep when you're tired. And that's our policy. That's the way we were kind of taught. And so that's what we did for him. And for 2 weeks, we hardly said much to him, and because he wouldn't talk. We talked to him, but he wouldn't answer too much. And he even told us that there was a longhouse within a mile and a half from where we lived that was 1,100 foot long. And that we'd have to do an archaeological dig to make sure that it wasn't two longhouses butt to butt that made it 1,100 foot long. But an archaeological dig would have to take place to prove if it was one or if it was butt to butt two. And I never had time. But he filled us in with the great law. And he wasn't even a native, but his father was interested in it, and his grandfather and his mother, and they were all professors at universities, so he's a very educated man. And he's the one that told me that the Great Law is over 2,000 years old, and that we should never say that it's only 1,000 years old. And he told me so many things, and he became he was like a German Shepherd dog, because we were new to the area. Anybody say anything against us, he'd go after them. And he protected us. But at first, he was scary. We really didn't know who he was. But because we followed our tradition and be kind and hospitable and fed him, we became the best friends until he died.
Wow. That's good.
Thank you.
That's like when you see a homeless, like a homeless person. I think I don't know who somebody is. It could be God. You don't give them any, money, or you give them something of yours, right? Like if you have food on you. So now I was like, gotta see someone. Okay, here's some money. But it's true. You don't know who you're gonna meet just because of the way they look or the situation that they're in. Yeah. But that's the work that we're doing for RJ, is to really have compassion for people and to help them as much as we can, as long as they're willing. Because RJ is a voluntary program, so for both the offender and for the victim to participate, and it's not enforced.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just joining us, ladies and gentlemen, this is a program on restorative justice here at CKRZ. I'm Al Sue, and with us today, we've got Barbara General, Tom Porter, Lady Canal, Lee Hill, Lance Logan Key, and Abby Avery. And we'll be back in just a moment to continue on with the program. Don't forget, if you have a question for our panel, give us a call at 519-445-4140.
Here's a fun fact about restorative justice. Did you know that we have a restorative justice program in our community? This program puts a human face on the handling of crime and violence. Rather than being purely punitive, it integrates the Haudenosaunee principles and values to promote healing and closure.